Welcome to the Dork Forest. Jackie and her pals will never bore us. Shameless confessions
about our obsessions
will make us laugh and smile. So let's explore the Dork Forest and dork out for a while.
Hi, this is Jackie Cation, and you are about to listen to the Dork Forest since 2006. And it is on iTunes, of course, where you may have received it. You may have gotten it at dorkforest.com. Feel free to review it on iTunes. We are part of the All Things Comedy Network, allthingscomedy.com, where my new hour special, This Will Make an Excellent Horcrux, is available for $5 download. Knock yourselves out. My website, JackieCation.com, has a player if you want to just listen to it and you don't want to do iTunes. And JackieCation.com has everything. It has my stand-up schedule. It has a merch page where you can get Dork Forest t-shirts and even order a Dork Forest hoodie if you like. All of the shirts are made in America because while I'm willing to wear clothing that are made by toddlers, I'm unwilling to sell clothing made by toddlers. The hoodie, special ordered, for some reason, still made in the Philippines. I don't know why. Possibly because they're super cozy and I don't sell that many of them, but I should work on that. Anyway, there's a chance to donate to the Dork Forest. If you enjoy the Dork Forest, feel free to donate. $100 a year makes you a super fan, and you could do that in one chunk of $100, or you could break it up however you want, because I have not made that easy for you. It would be $8.33 a month if you want to do it. You could also just order stuff if you want Dork Forest t-shirts or CDs or DVD. I have 3 CDs out and 1 DVD, and you can order all of them. You could order a t-shirt, you could order a hoodie, and that will also support the show, and I totally appreciate that. Yeah, just so you know, the DVD of the Horcrux is Friday Second Show. That is the video. And the CD is Saturday Second Show. I don't know. I didn't videotape that one, but I like that set better. So that is the CD. The DVD is approximately 56 minutes long, and the CD, about 40, 48. So they're different sets, but they're the same material. And it's weird, but I like it. The credits. Let's credit the people that make this show possible, quite honestly. We have Mike Rickberg, who sang the intro song and composed the intro song and sings it with his girlfriend, Sarah Cohen, and he will sing Mexican Hat Dance at the end of this. The audio is fixed every week, and the teasers are created by Mr. Patrick Brady, friend of the show. Vilmos does my website, JackieCation.com. So if you're looking for someone to do your website, go to JackieCation.com, scroll down, and click on that link. All right, let's do this. Enjoy. At RBC Wealth Management, social responsibility starts at the top. As a part of the Royal Bank of Canada, RBC has been recognized among the world's financial, social, and environmental corporate leaders. Our sense of responsibility extends to our reputation for putting clients' interests first. My personal commitment is to help you achieve your financial goals by also considering sustainable and responsible investing strategies. To learn more, visit www.darlacashian.com. RBC Wealth Management, a division of RBC Capital Markets, LLC. Member NYSE, FINRA, SIPC. Hey, it's Jackie Cation. I'm at Akon, but this is non-anime related. Sitting with me, Andy Ashcraft. My in-house resident game designer expert, and our guest today, Josh T. Jordan. T, yes. As in Tiberius?
I wish.
Okay. Welcome to the program, Josh Jordan.
Well, thank you.
What is your Twitter handle, so people...
At Josh T. Jordan.
Oh, catchily enough. Spelled like all the normal. It isn't Josh with an umlaut, no?
Josh Jordan, like the country and the basketball star... But somehow pizza people still get it wrong.
Oh, interesting. That is that's a special gift all by themselves. Yes. So you have made RPGs, tabletop, and you brought...
I brought a couple.
Comics, or you brought
these are the books.
These are the RPG books.
Yes.
Tabletop. All right, so we're talking tabletop gaming today.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I brought Andy Ashcraft with me. Yay. All right.
Yay. One of my favorite things to do.
All right, well, start asking him questions.
Well, first off, I have to say that I bought heroin under somebody's recommendation last year.
Oh, right on.
The PDF.
The PDF through Drive-Thru RPG.
Mm-hmm.
And really, it's really quite interesting.
Well,
I haven't played it, but I've read through it. And so I'm excited to know that you've sort of pushed forward with this sort of storytelling mechanics.
So Heroin, if people go, what website is that one available at?
You can find the digital copy of everything at DriveThru, THRU.
Okay.
DriveThruRPG.com. And there's everything that's in physical form is at Indie Press Revolution.
Okay. Okay. And what they are is they're books to create your own adventure kind of thing, right? Like D&D.
Yes.
Okay. And the fact that you've read the books, Andy, and not played the game, is a classic RPG moment. And so we're like, well, I don't have anyone to play with, but I will read this book at least once.
We'll read the book.
The digital sort of revolution, the ability to get them just electronically has only increased that part of it.
Yes.
That's not really a problem as long as you're still having fun.
Right. Yeah, I suppose, right?
Right, right. And it's tell us a little bit. Why don't you tell us about Heroin?
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, all of my games, and Heroin is the first that I was able to publish, are part of a tradition called indie role-playing, which is just a fancy way of saying there's no big publishing company behind it, even compared to D&D.
Which doesn't seem huge, right. And yet...
But it's huge.
They make huge.
Millions of dollars.
Okay.
For a book company, they're not that big.
Okay.
Well, the ones I do, I am able to publish as a very small 1 to 1.5 man company. And there are lots of those, and Heroin is the first one that I've done.
Okay.
And I've just sort of become aware of this since going to Gen Con last year and going and having conversations with people and then having like being exposed to all this crazy stuff that's happening in the indie RPG world that I had no idea.
Okay.
Like, there are games for everything. I mean, like...
Oh, much like comic books and
like comic books,
they can be about anything.
Manga, they can be about anything and the mechanics can be about anything or nothing. You know, a lot oftentimes they're...
It's just a story or...
just like... Here's a world to play in and
go wander around in it.
Right.
And the ones that I Heroin, we'll just talk about Heroin for a second.
Yeah.
That's the one that I came out with. It's only been 2 or 3 years, but basically a lot of the movies and stories that I like as a kid that were kind of in the fantastical world.
Yeah.
Had heroic kind of teenage girls in them, like Labyrinth or Alice in Wonderland.
Okay.
Or, you know, Wizard of Oz even. And that would be a terrible D&D game, but it's a fun story.
Okay, because D&D is more a smash and grab kind of thing.
And it's party,
it's
a group of people.
It's not solo quest, coming of age lady thing.
Right.
Okay.
And they all kill things.
Okay.
Which is not what, you know, say Labyrinth is really about. There's more than one interesting character.
Okay.
But the role-playing isn't really there. So I made a game that does that sort of story. I have since come out with a couple of sort of supplements for that. Like, what if... one guy I know has lived in Japan for a long time, and he wanted to kind of translate it into a more of a historical Japanese teenage girl, which is still not a good D&D game, but is an interesting story to explore. So he kind of went off and did his own thing. And that one that you've got in your hands right there, Girls Elsewhere,
right,
is actually several of these indie game authors got together, and they each wrote a chapter, which is a different world. So one guy...
Oh.
He lives in the Philippines, and he knows lots about creepy Filipino mythology and these monsters.
That's cool.
And so he basically said, oh, yeah, what if you traveled into a Filipino mythological world?
Yeah.
And I was just like, yes.
So when they you essentially through your online sort of presence, you got to meet these other writers and artists and authors, and they were like, I would like to play in your world as well.
Yes.
And you're like, yes, please write. So is this, am I pronouncing this right? A mod? Is this its own, like, their own little stories within that you can then take the yes. game mechanics from Heroin and play in these stories?
Yes. So Girls Elsewhere is a supplement book. You could call it a setting book.
Okay.
I never remember. I want to say 8 different settings.
Okay.
So you would, in this particular case, you would need those 2 books.
Right.
In order to use what's in Girl's Girl
Service. It's like American Girls dolls, but more adventure-y.
Yes.
And, yeah, that's...
You can actually play your American Girl doll character.
Ooh.
In these games, right?
I might not personally enjoy
it. But. No, but if someone were into American Girl dolls and they wanted to take their sweatshop worker kid, which is what an American Girl doll is, they're like in their weird American, like it's, they're never, like it's one girl's a slave, another one's
but
like.
Some of them are wealthier.
Right, right. They have wealthier ones, but right. They have poor kids and they have, you know, and so, but they're all, they're, the initial one is like, it's cool that you went with like a coming of age because there's so many coming of age boy stories that this is really fun for a market that doesn't always, you know, have stuff for women.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Right. And we do see a lot more stories about them, like you say, like Labyrinth and Alice in Wonderland. And there's like, there's, and I guess Wicked.
Oh, right.
I'm sorry.
Not Wicked?
Maleficent that just came out.
Right, which is essentially the...
Which is essentially that
Wicked.
That sort of story for...
Oh, for little kids.
For the girl, the Sleeping Beauty girl.
Okay.
Because she's, you know, I've only seen the trailer, so...
Sure.
Right, but...
Go forth.
I'm willing to speak about it at length. No.
Please hold forth. Hold forth about how great this film is.
I believe that, you know, a central character to that is the Sleeping Beauty character who's 15 years old.
Okay.
So this is sort of her awakening, which is what a lot of these are. Like in Labyrinth, it's about the girl's awakening and sort of realizing self-awareness, you know, becoming self-aware.
Okay.
But what I like about these games is that instead of the mechanics being about, you know, fighting or, you know, breaking open doors or, you know, treasure gathering, it's the mechanics themselves are about the storytelling, right? So where did that come from? Where did that...
Yeah, what are the mechanics?
How did you get there?
Well, the two things that I wanted to do in Heroin were make, on the one hand, like we talked about, make something that would sort of reproduce this genre of story, the coming-of-age girl story, especially when she gets whisked away into a sort of a magical world. It's like, all right, you're the one who can save the day. What does that look like for you?
Okay.
And on the other hand, make a game that is perfect for my wife, who is a role player, sort of.
Awesome.
She's a role player, and I'm not knocking her ability. It's
no.
Some days she's on board, and some days she's not on board. And she has a very social job. So,
are you married to me? he's constantly trying to invent a game that I will play.
Exactly.
Okay.
I think that's a good source of inspiration for yeah. A lot of creative people. But so
she is my muse.
Sure.
And your muse wanted.
She likes to play games, but sometimes she doesn't want to be in the spotlight. Sometimes she's perfectly happy being the focus of attention and what's going on in the story.
Right.
Sometimes she'd much rather just be sort of a supporting character, like a helper.
Okay.
And in Heroin, what I tried to do is make the different roles. So there's the narrator, who kind of controls and describes what's going on and controls all the bad guys and all of the bit players. Like a GM.
Okay.
And then there's the heroine, who's the main character and makes all the big choices. Like, what are we going to do? How are we going to stop this?
Okay.
Overcome this thing?
Right.
And then there's all the little companions who are kind of the weird, like, I'm the Cowardly Lion. I'm Hoggle from Labyrinth or whatever.
Okay.
So that role is specifically for my wife because the companion player can decide, I want to... like, totally mess with how the story is going.
Okay.
So I just want to kind of be a helper in the background.
Okay. So you can, okay, so, I mean, that's one of the great things about the tabletop RPG is that you can, it's really choose your own adventure. I mean, you get to pick, and I remember sure. When I was playing that first D&D adventure, I had never played Dungeons & Dragons before I met you, and we met a witch, and the witch said, you have three questions, and I go, how tall are you? And Andy goes, well, that was one. And I was like, damn it! And the other people at the table were like, no, stop talking now. If you could please stop talking now. And, right, so I never know.
I forgot about that.
Oh, I have not. That's because that's how you learn. That's how you learn how to play a tabletop game, it turns out, by inadvertently throwing away a question.
Kind of a mean GM. Either.
No, you are not.
But you.
I must have triggered something.
All your favorite stories about my game are when I was a mean GM.
No, I think, well, because the only other one was the dragon one.
Sure.
When we found aging dragons, and I said, we had fought these lizard things, we found aging arrows.
Arrows that would make things age.
Okay.
Right, and then we ran into a baby dragon, and I said, should I shoot it with the aging arrow? And the other three players went, no! And he goes, well, if you wanted to. And he knew that they weren't going to let me. He's like, I don't think you understand. I was like, why would I understand that? Why would I know? Why would I know that dragons become more powerful and more magical and more whatever?
When they get older. Right.
Right. The rest of the world hates the aging. Right. Not in D&D and Dragons. The rest of us are just reviling the elderly and
but
putting
those
them in tiny boxes.
D&D since we were 13 years old.
Great respect for our elders.
Oh, it's so beautiful, the two of you.
That's how we are taught to respect our elders.
He's making a superhero RPG, and one of the things that he was one of the keys, if correct me if I'm wrong, Andy, is that the character sheet was simple enough that I could create a character.
Yes.
Because I'm not good at creating characters.
Yeah, you know, it's like you were saying, you make it for your loved ones. Mm-hmm. And I know that if she looks at a champion's character sheet, she's just going to go, nope.
Nope. Nope. Make me a character and I will play. Tell me how many dice to roll and I will be psyched that there's 37 dice involved. Mm-hmm. But I don't want to have to, and because there's different levels of liking these kind of games where some people have read the books and reread the books and swallowed the books and have memorized the books. I am not that person at this time. Yourself? Is it? Are you book related?
I'm perfectly happy to play D&D and/or read books that I will never use, but I sympathize completely because I have made several D&D characters for my wife in the I'm willing to play, but I don't want to do any homework department.
Right.
I can understand that.
Yeah, and I think that's a very common thing, and I think about this not just for tabletop RPGs, but also for other
board games
and all that. Things that look complicated is a huge turnoff to a lot of people.
Right.
And we could actually make this industry bigger by making the games look simpler, mm-hmm. even if they're not simpler, right? Even if there's really complicated things happening in the game, if we just made the games look simpler, we would get over that hump of like, oh, I can't commit to that.
Right. Not even necessarily hiding the complexity, but just like delaying it. So it's like,
yeah,
you don't need to
exactly.
know everything before you start.
That's right. Yeah, oh. can we start playing in 20 minutes?
I love that. Please do that with every game ever created.
Right.
Because I would like to start playing in 20 minutes. Remember that weird Hellraiser game?
Yeah.
Which was Descent into Hell? Is that what it was called?
Yeah, I think so.
It had a bajillion tiny chits.
Oh, yeah.
And it was just too... It was too much. It was fascinating. Mm-hmm. There were the rings of hell. You were like, I want to go through the rings of hell. Who doesn't? oh, virtually through a board game?
Oh, okay.
Yes. But it took us an hour and a half to set it up. And I was like, I am done now. And they're like, well, we're going to start playing now. And I was like, all right, well, I'm going to get a soda.
yeah, then weirdly enough in that game, we hit a weird rules anomaly, and after an hour and a half of setting up, the game was over in 20 minutes.
That's backwards, I think. It's
that's weird.
Yeah. So what do you create characters in the heroine thing? Is it like that?
Yes. There are character sheets. You don't necessarily need them. They're more...
I also like the size of this book.
Yes. This is one of my biggest games, and it is 58 pages.
Yeah,
so blessedly short.
That's the way games should be for more casual play.
Okay,
there can be source books and spell books and all those other things for people who want to read
expansion-y kind of stuff.
Just show you, which doesn't help the listener at all. But basically, character sheets are what's your name, and here's a reminder of how the rules work.
They're beautiful.
Oh my gosh! Yeah,
it's all swirly
and cool, nice font, and it's got there's accent agus, or at least just the I is dotted in a great fashion. They are beautiful, and it's like sign here. What is your name of your character? Okay, the story starts when and she enters the story when, and then she usually causes trouble by. Okay, these are, yeah, this is almost exactly like in the fact that there's five things to fill out.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And then you may begin playing the game.
And I'm not the guy who came up with the idea of doing things that way, but I am 100% on board.
Do you know who that guy was?
Well,
In your world?
Yes.
Okay.
We could have whole episodes of, let me tell you about all these ingenious role-playing game designers.
I don't know any of them.
Sure. The guy who I think I noticed did character sheets right for beginners is Fred Hicks. How would you possibly know him? He is one of the creators of the Dresden Files RPG.
Yeah.
So,
oh, the Dresden File RPG?
Yes.
Yeah, and there is such a thing.
Yeah, all right.
But he came up with a game, and it was basically, I think there's five questions that you answer on the character sheet, and it's got about as much information on it. Like, there's some check boxes to remind you where you are in the story. In his game, it's kind of about you're an insomniac, and you have been awake for so long that you have gained superpowers and access to a crazy world. And basically it's, do you want to become so powerful that you go insane, or do you want to try to run away a lot? And those are really... So basically it's a game with a death spiral. It's not a literal death spiral, but it's like kind of a...
Right. The more powerful you get, the closer you are to the end of your life.
Yes. And I really like...
Oh, interesting.
That he made it... Like, his character sheet is as simple as it needs to be. There's another one that I will mention by a guy who... Good luck Googling this. It's Epidiah Ravishall. The easiest way to find him might be to go to my podcast, because he was one of my first guests.
You have a podcast? Yes. What is your podcast?
Thank
you very much.
You know, another guest on the podcast. I forget which episode it was, but it's tellmeanother.net, and it's a podcast about all kinds of storytellers.
Oh, that's right. Yes. Hello. It's yes.
A lovely Jackie Cation on.
Yes, I was I was on that one. And so tellmeanother.net.
Yes.
As if people want. I mean, I posted it just around, but if they want to listen to all the episodes, they go to tellmeanother.net, and it's also on iTunes and all that stuff,
yes,
right?
Okay. Indeed, please do. Epidiah Ravishall was one of the first guests, and he made a game called Dread, which the character sheet is answer these five questions. That's the whole thing.
Okay.
And his game is a Jenga tower. And it's sort of like some kind of scary game. It can be zombies or whatever.
Right.
But whenever the GM tells you, okay, this is what's going on, and you decide, well, I shoot the zombie, you need to make a pull on the Jenga tower and put it on top. And if the Jenga tower falls off,
yeah,
then you have pulled... You then describe how your character has died.
Oh, okay. So it's a tell your own the story of your own death game.
Like you get,
okay.
You get one paragraph to explain how you just failed miserably, or have the GM do it for you. But basically, it's the his game is super clever in that I dare you not to be nervous when you're playing Jenga.
Okay.
But the whole point of a kind of a scary game is to get slowly more nervous throughout the scary movie you're watching.
Right.
Right.
So he just tied the two together. But he also is one of the first people I saw who did this, the kind of fun character.
The streamlined, right. Yeah, super streamlined.
Like, what's the bare minimum of things you need to know about your character to start playing the game?
And on the other side, there's the champions.
Right.
And then
you sort of need to have
trigonometry, calculus. What's happening?
You need to do a lot of number crunching.
Yeah. Okay. So, are there any other ones that we haven't? Because I've played I've played D&D and I've played Champions, and I've played Pathfinder,
right?
Which is D&D, right. But
Fate.
Yes.
Is another one where it's a little bit more complicated than five questions, but it's really sort of focused on like, well, how do you define your character, as opposed to how does the game define characters?
Okay.
And choose one of these things. It's sort of like,
oh, okay,
you make up whatever stats you want.
Okay.
Kind of thing. I am good at these things, and then you put a number behind it. And the more specific the thing, like if, say, I'm good at fighting, but you're good at sword fighting.
Okay.
If we're in a sword fight, yours matters more.
Okay. But if you're in a fist fight, then you're even,
kind
of.
We're just kind of making up I mean, there are lists that you can use. By the way, Fred Hicks is one of the adventures.
One of the designs, yeah.
Oh, oh, cool. So go Fred Hicks. No, that's, I mean, it's fascinating because do you play a lot of RPG? I mean, do you play as many games as possible in addition to?
Well, I have two small children.
Okay, how small?
Question. 3 months and 3 years.
Aw.
So I go to Japan as often as I can, and I play with friends as often as I can.
Is that your phone?
Oh, yeah,
wow, it sounds like a cable across the room.
It really, that was perfect. And I turned my phone off for the very first time here at the Dork Forest. So you go to Gen Con. Now, Gen Con, if people don't know, is a board game convention in Indianapolis. It started out in Lake Geneva, Wisconsin, mm-hmm. where I'm from,
and
Wisconsin.
And where D&D was started.
Was D&D, was Gary Gygax from Wisconsin?
Yeah.
I don't think I knew that.
I remembered where he was from, but
well, I'm from Wisconsin. I should know all Wisconsin. Liberace's from Wisconsin. We have Fred Ed Gein and bowling. Jeffrey Dahmer. There was bowling, sure. There was So Jen, but it's in August in Indianapolis,
right?
And we will be there. You will be there pitching your board game.
Right.
I will be doing Crackers downtown, ladies and gentlemen, August 14th through the 18th. Come on down if you're doing Gen Con or live in Indiana. And so I'll be doing stand-up that week, and you'll be going to Gen Con.
This is synergy between us here, by the way.
This is beautiful. Are you going to Gen Con as well this year?
Excellent.
Do you go every year? Or try to?
Family allowing. Family permitting.
Right.
So
sure.
Every year, or sometimes I'll miss a one.
Okay. How long has it been going on?
I don't know.
It moved from Lake Geneva to Indianapolis, I suppose it must at least 10 years.
Yeah.
Okay.
I want to say 20 or 30.
Okay.
And it's probably closer to 30.
And it's 80,000 people?
Oh, I don't remember now. I think it was something like that.
Okay.
It's a lot of folks.
I remember when, because you had never been, right? You went for the first time last year?
Yeah, the first time last year. I had a great time. They have a terrific room called the First Exposure Playtest Hall.
Oh, yes.
Where
I happen to know the person who runs that.
Oh, excellent. Yes.
What's that person's name?
Avanel Wing.
Yes.
That is the greatest name in the world, Avanel Wing. Well played.
She is very nice.
Okay.
And I basically ran my board game at the First Exposure Playtest Hall last year.
Cool.
And now that it's been a year of iteration, I'm going to do it again.
Okay.
And then hopefully, and then pitch it.
Yeah.
What's your game called?
It's called Brutiki.
Brutiki.
And we played it yesterday here at Akon, and it was really fun. And it's Norse tiki gods.
Norse tiki gods have discovered the South Pacific.
Okay.
Norse gods have discovered the South Pacific and have become tiki gods.
Okay.
So
yes.
And it's a bridge building game. You're building bridges between islands, and then you're moving the islands around, and you're causing destruction, and you're doing that sort of stuff. It's a strategy game.
Yes, and you and your godlike powers can move those islands around, and you can destroy bridges and build bridges, and it was super fun. And that convention has every kind of game, right? It has
any sort of tabletop game,
so board games and RPG games. And you've been at least three or four times, or
yeah. And it's vast, like it's huge stadium size play. You're basically filled with tables of people playing games.
Is it like a convention center?
It's
or?
A convention center, yeah.
Yeah, the Indianapolis Convention Center is pretty large. And they also take over pretty much all the hotels around there and have seminars and whatnot going on. And they're
people
doing live action role playing and all that good
stuff. You saw the two rooms that are here for gaming.
Yes. Picture 19 of those or whatever?
Picture 100 of them.
But my thing about LARPs, which is live action role playing games, a lot of people don't know, the ones that I've seen, and there's only been three or four of them, take like 6 or 7 hours.
There's a lot of different kinds. Actually,
we sat down and played D&D for 6 or 7 hours.
There's another game that I brought with me.
Yes, is that new?
A postcard
game?
It is called Doll. It is a 20-minute, two-person LARP. Which is kind of, it is a fun, goofy, scary game that is partly a proof of concept that LARPs don't have to be
a 6-hour event.
And
okay.
There are there's a whole group of LARP designers who do what are called parlor LARPs, which are you could do them in a, in somebody's living room.
Okay.
Maybe one person will dress up, maybe everybody will dress up, whatever.
Right.
This is more like what we, what we've done with the Enigma games, is they're considered parlor LARPs.
Okay, or theater LARPs, or
theater LARPs, yeah.
Yeah, okay. And then so
there's a whole, like, I'm only a fan of LARPs. I don't consider myself a super expert, but over the past year I've just learned that there are a million different kinds, and not all of them have foam swords.
That's right, right. Because right. Are those ones called combat LARPs?
Yeah, what
are
the combat
they?
LARPs.
Okay, combat. Because they were selling them down in the dealer room. They were selling foam, the
Jack
coolest looking swords.
About the cool swords.
They were clearly not real, and yet they looked real. And they were, you know, there were rapiers, and there were cutlasses, and there were broadswords.
But this is really cool about like playing in public, just two players. Have you? You should look at a festival called Come Out and Play.
Okay.
Which is basically a festival of outdoor games. Mm. And
outdoor games. Oh, right. Is that thing in New York?
Yeah, yeah. They run it in New York. They run it in San Francisco and I think several other places now. I'm not sure. But that's this is like a perfect game for Come Out and Play.
Nice.
So
like let your freak flag fly kind of thing.
Very
like
much.
Advertising
very
that
much.
Normal people play these weird games.
Yeah, and it's just what it's meant to be is it's a festival of sort of games that people can walk up, like they play it in public spaces, they run it in big public spaces, and people can walk up and just go, oh, this looks fun, can I play? And they, yes, they can.
Mm-hmm.
And they
okay.
Because totally
there's some sign up, but there's also...
Yeah, there might be sign like there might be, and they range from being very much sports-like games, so...
What was the one where somebody duplicated the game where Tarzan swings over the...
Yeah, we the first one I went to, I helped a guy. I was basically just a volunteer, and
just to see what it was, right?
Yeah, and he did live Pitfall in a theater, and so basically had a rope swing across the stage, and people just sort of cycled through, nice. Swinging across, and he projected the classic backgrounds from Pitfall, the old
right.
Pit backgrounds, and the only judging were people up in the projection booth actually just watching and going, yeah, he fell in the water.
And that was the whole game.
And that was the whole game. And it was totally fun.
There's another game that there's like three or four different settings for called Parsley, like P-A-R-S-E,
mm-hmm.
Parsley. And the premise of that is, you know, the old text adventures like Zork and all those other ones where
yeah.
it's like, so imagine the GM is holding his little clipboard and you're the player. You step up on the stage and he says, you are in a forest. You have a sword. Exits are north and west. And he just looks at his little flow chart, and you say, I go west. And he'll say, oh, you see an ogre. And they'll do you know, lines out the door, and people tend to die in, like, the first
okay.
turn. But then you'll listen to the last guy, and you're like, oh, there's an ogre over there. I can't kill him with my sword. So
each player is the life.
Yes.
And so you're
oh, it's just a row of, and essentially you're learning it's evolution. What's the name of that game?
Your memory is only so long, right?
I suppose, right?
So if you're like the seventh person back,
mm-hmm.
you don't hear how the first person died.
Oh, right. So you could repeat that. Okay, that's...
I like institutional memory games.
It's, yeah, there was that one, then there was the Come Out and Play.
Circle Rules Football was like a really sports, like the sports-oriented game where it was a giant field and there were people running all over playing this ball game. And then there was like a keep away sort of game that was played that was also very sports-like.
Mm-hmm.
But then they also play sort of scavenger hunt games throughout the city.
Oh, right. And then there was some game where you had to get people to dance across Times Square with you.
That's right. There was your goal was to get people who were crossing the street to dance across the street with you.
Okay.
And
it worked, right?
It worked.
Some people did it.
And people did it, and people were having a great time. So that's one where the players were actually like encouraging other people to join the game that way.
I like that.
Right, and then there was something between the shuttle, the subway?
There was a game. So what's that little tiny piece of subway that runs between?
Just the S, the shuttle.
The shuttle?
Yeah, it's just the S train.
In New York.
between Grand Central and Penn Station.
Correctly, the goal was to get people to carry something, like carry a colored token.
Yeah, like a flag or something.
To the other side and give it to somebody else on the other side.
Okay.
And so you had team members on either side, and you were basically like trying to find people who would be willing to do this in rush hour in New York.
And yeah, so I mean, it's so interactive that and super short. So you ran the graveyard LARP,
right? Right. So the next
a time
year,
travel.
They moved the game out to Brooklyn, and there was a great great big historical graveyard out there called
can't remember.
I can't remember. So they had actually asked me. It's like, can you design a LARP to be played in this graveyard? And some friends of mine and I designed the LARP for it. And and then I got there and realized that the graveyard was actually much bigger than I thought it was from the maps. Like, the maps didn't give me a good sense of scale, and I realized that the graveyard was like three times larger than all the places that I had.
Oh, we're
like people should go in the graveyard, and it's like, yeah, those are miles apart. Those are not like hundreds of yards apart. Those are like,
you were hoping it was a tiny Boston cemetery instead of a giant Brooklyn cemetery.
Yeah, well, I didn't realize.
Yeah, there's the wood, and you showed me the maps. I had no idea myself, so could have been anything.
So I ended up having to, like, in the last, like, the day before it started, like, all right, well, let me find a corner of this graveyard to play in. But people had fun, and it didn't go off as well as I anticipated, but people had fun.
Good.
Yeah.
And so how long have you been writing games?
Publishing maybe 3 years, and, you know, playing around, and I've been
But writing games, yes. Like making games for your friends, how long? That's what counts.
You get credit for all of it.
I would say my brother and I probably started 15 years ago in writing very poorly designed additions to whatever, our superhero games of choice at the time. It's this is clearly unbalanced, which is a notorious problem for superhero games.
Yes.
It's like, I'm invisible and invincible. You can have whatever powers you want. So we, of course, as what we use, you know, like 15 to 16 year olds were able to figure out exactly how it should be really fair.
Sure. Right, you got to fair it up.
Right. Well, that's the way that these things work, right?
Mm-hmm. Right. Are there games that you just like playing right now that you would recommend for the listener?
Sure.
Besides Heroin.
Oh, of course. There's Heroin, and then there's the expansion Girls Elsewhere.
Well, if you're into LARP, there is a LARP that I'm going to be publishing, but I did not write. It's coming out next month, I want to say, that is loosely inspired by Heroin, but it's all its own rules. It's just sort of a, you know, hey, you like that Labyrinth and Alice in Wonderland thing? Here's a LARP version of it. That's called Dangers Untold, and it's by a live-action writer named Shoshana Kesick, who's a nice New York grad student in the area of game design.
Oh, excellent.
Oh, that's cool.
And then just for fun, I would say check out a game. Again, I need to pick games by people who are easier to spell, but check out a game called Zombie Cinema. You can find it on Indie Press Revolution.
Okay.
It's made by a Finnish man named Eero Tuolvinen. So good luck on that one.
Oh, wow.
Nice pronunciation.
Well played on that.
I had to ask for multiple people to help me with that. But he has sort of a VHS cassette box that inside it is all you need to play a two-hour-long zombie game. And that's a great convention game because you can just kind of rope people in, and it is highly unlikely that more than one person will survive. But games where, you know, like in D&D, if you die, you're done playing.
Yeah, you have to make a new character or something, right?
In Zombie Cinema, if you die, you get to help play the zombies. So
sure.
When people die, they tend to always be laughing and still on board with the rest of the game. And I've run that at Gen Con for people who have never played role-playing games before, and everybody seems to have a pretty good time with it.
Yeah, it's cool. It's a genre that people get. Yeah. Right. And then
that zombie,
like,
thing, or
yeah, and they're perfectly happy to play zombies too. Mm-hmm. Like once they're done being scared of the zombies, and it's almost cathartic to go and be a zombie.
Because usually one of your friends has thrown you under the bus. And now it's your mission to make sure that they don't make off on either.
But the analogy of society, man, we all just give up and eventually become the zombie, man. That's how it goes. We all just get these jobs and offices, and now we're just zombies.
Yep. I played in one of those sorts of games, and I was one of the six human players to start the game, six living people.
Yeah.
And the GM was very smart about it. He let us be in this house for probably 4 or 5 hours, just like watching movies, playing games, before the zombies attacked. So we had like all this time to sort of relax and sort of get used to, like, oh, we're just here in this space. And,
right.
And then all of a sudden it was like a zombie attack.
Nice.
And it was great.
All right, because they were at the windows, weren't they?
Yeah, they were at the windows, and they had timed it. Like, he had gotten all these other people to be zombies. And they hit the windows at the same time all around the house, and it was terrifying. Freaking terrified.
Yeah, I would not play that game. But didn't
he had even enlisted? This is a great story. He had enlisted. So there was.
Was this Aaron Vanek?
No, it was Richard Becker.
Richard Becker made this story.
Richard
okay,
Becker made this game. And friend of the show.
Friend of the show, Richard Becker.
But he had. There was a husband and wife, and because they had small children, at any given game, only one or the other of them would play, and the other one would stay home with the children.
Sounds familiar.
Sounds right.
Mom was playing. Dad was home with the kids. They were playing. The humans were playing themselves. So the idea was the scenario was, you are yourselves in a world that does not have zombie movies or zombie. You don't know anything about zombies. There's no tradition of zombie stories. So at one point she says, "Well, I'm me, right? I need to call my family."
Oh,
and she didn't know that he had already enlisted
the husband,
her family.
Yeah.
And so she calls, and her daughter, who's maybe four, answers. And says, "There's something wrong with Daddy." And you hear in the background,
"Wow,
that is some deep, deep play, my friends. That is deep in the dork forest.
Awesome stuff." But yeah, everybody's on board with zombie games,
right? But Andy has approximately 22 to 47 people that he can play games with at any moment.
At any moment. It's awesome.
Los Angeles, when we met, he said, "We will never move because I cannot find people to play games with in other cities."
I tried to.
They're there.
It didn't work.
Yeah, they're there. I just can't find them fast enough. And I was like, fair enough.
If you go to Gen Con for 3 or 4 years in a row, you will find one person in every city, which yes, is not sure. Exactly a solution.
But it's a good start, because they might be connected to three other people.
Yeah, right.
And but do you have such a community here in the Dallas area?
You know, there's a monthly board game meetup, and we've been two or three times ever.
Okay.
And I would certainly recommend people in Dallas go and check it out. I think it's called Dallas Games Marathon. But the very first time we met two other couples who were our age and into exactly the same kind of board games and role-playing games.
Perfect.
And we have... So that was probably 6 years ago, and we've been hanging out with them ever since. And whenever... Now, we all have plenty of young kids right now, but whenever we get the chance, we can
right, but that's fortuitous that you would meet them all and then know each other.
Right, and if you have kids that are about the same size and the same age, and that's extra handy, right?
Yeah.
Okay. You're like, go roll around like puppies. And
play
we're going
to... for the kids become board game dates for half of the adults.
We're working on getting the oldest, who are about five, into Pokemon and that kind of stuff, because it's kind of a little gateway drug for them.
Right, right. There was one of his friends, they have a small child, and he was always around. And so we were playing Candyland once, and Judy comes over, the mom, and says, "How's it going?" I said, "He's doing pretty well. I'm not letting him win." She goes, "Oh, please don't let him win. He's going to be playing games for the next 70 years. He has to learn how that it so doesn't matter. There'll be another game." And I was like, "Oh, good. I mean, I'm not going to kick his ass. He's five. It seems rude."
And honestly, you can't in Candyland.
Yeah. Candyland
is completely random.
Is a terribly designed game.
Ooh.
But a nice experience.
I see.
It plays itself.
Yeah, there's no choices. You just
it's just colors.
Follow the rules.
Right.
Here's how to. It's basically a training game for kids, so you can teach them how to follow rules.
Okay.
Of games.
Oh, the next game.
Yeah.
It's like, this is how games are played.
Follow
okay.
the rules.
And then
later on we'll
introduce you to something more interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
We actually got we get Highlights magazine, the even younger kids version for my 3-year-old.
Wow.
And they had a board game inside of that game, which I thought was, I don't know why I'm harping on Candyland, but I thought it was better designed than Candyland. So he and I played that until it fell apart.
Well, any choice point would make it a better game, right?
It was a very similar looking board, but it's like, okay, do you want to go to the apple or do you want to go to the banana?
Right.
And
oh, they've doubled your fun.
Yes.
They've doubled your fun because
exactly.
you could take two different routes. I mean, have you ever played Quirkle? Have you seen Quirkle yet?
I have seen it, and I hear good things.
It is Idiot Scrabble, and I like it because I'm terrible at Scrabble.
Okay.
And for some reason, as a person who deals in language all the time, I hate that I'm bad at Scrabble, so I can't play Scrabble. But Quirkle, it's just shapes and colors. I don't care if I'm bad at shapes and colors, it turns out. I can be a moron
don't
about
any,
it.
Don't have any of your self-esteem.
No.
Shapes and colors.
It is not hooked up with how I am at getting shapes and colors in the right order. So I can play Quirkle. And how great would it be if I could look at my tiles of Quirkle and one day get good at Scrabble? How great would that be?
I think it might help.
It can't hurt, for the love of God. Well, I don't understand why I can't see words.
You know, we barely touched on this doll game, but I want to go back to it because I'm looking at these cards and it's one player plays the doll and
okay.
one player plays the child.
Oh, weird.
Mm-hmm. It's supposed to be a little creepy.
Yeah, yeah.
It's funny that it's a trigger for a lot of people.
Yeah.
The creepy toy is a scary
right.
element that a lot of people are like, oh, no.
But, yeah.
But it doesn't have to be creepy.
It does not, yes.
In Doll, the pitch for it is one player plays the child, one player plays the doll, and the doll doesn't always tell the truth about important things. So it's a 20-minute game, and the child is essentially there's a sort of a order of a few events happening, and the child player doesn't know exactly what's going on. The doll player decides, this is what's really going on, and whenever the child asks me, I get to decide whether I'm telling the truth or not.
Okay.
And
so
the child player tends to be...
Just furious at the doll?
Yes.
It's like, I am going to throw this doll away.
Yeah.
And then that doll becomes Chucky and starts killing children.
It never ends with the doll having completely convinced the child.
Well, the mechanic... So those are the rules.
Mm-hmm.
The sort of random element is you basically play a version of rock, paper, scissors.
Mm-hmm.
And except the child only wins one out of three times. And whenever the child wins, the doll has to tell the truth. The rest of the time, the doll can decide whether or not it's So some of the scariest ones are when the doll never lies, and the child player just assumes that there's something ominous going on in the background.
Yes.
Like, your parents are fine, they're just in the basement doing the plumbing. And that is literally what's happening. But the child player assumes, that's too easy. There's got to be, my parents are both dead.
Right. And they can't get the win to get the truth answer at the right moment.
Well, you've officially creeped me out, and I won't be playing it. Congratulations. Play in public. Bring a doll, puppet, or other toy. She's wrong. We'll play. You play the doll and speak for the doll. Oh, like you really do. Like when you're playing doll.
Yeah.
Okay. Like when you're playing any action figure doll.
Talk to the doll.
Talk to the hand. Talk to the hand that's got a doll in it. And the doll knows everything, but isn't always honest. Oh, Creep Factor 9. It's
you can find it if you aren't sure you want to play.
Yeah.
If you go to YouTube and search for... I think it's... I have a YouTube channel that has maybe like 5 or 6 things on it. But so if you search for Josh T. Jordan, you might be able to find it. There are some recordings of me playing Doll with people and other people playing it.
Yeah.
Excuse me, there's a guy who has a Salvador Dali doll.
Yeah.
And he does just the creepiest. Everything is okay. There's nothing to worry about.
Well, as soon as the doll starts talking, you've definitely entered into a world that...
You could give it a creepy voice or you could give it a nice voice.
Gee Willikers, everything's fine. I'm wearing a baseball cap. I'm your doll with a baseball cap. Yeah. And you're like, I'm still creeped out because you're a doll.
Well, I don't know which is a creepier voice. The normal one?
You're right. Whether it's your Bane or if it's like, rah, 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 and or something.
Right. What sort of voice would Laddie have?
Oh, my! I have a
dog.
So right.
Barks,
but. Laddie doesn't have. Yeah, there's not a lot of chatter with Laddie. My childhood stuffed animal is a dog, Laddie, because for some reason I loved Lassie, but I wanted a boy dog, so I named him Laddie, and
that makes sense.
Sure. And because I was reading Jim Kjelgaard and what I really wanted was an Irish setter. I wanted Big Red or Outlaw Red, which were the two books brought up in an earlier episode of the Dork Forest. The fact that woman knew, I hope that that episode. Yeah. There was an episode I did here at Acon with Kristen McGuire, and I brought up a children's book that I had read as a child. Could I have? No, right, because I'm more than willing to. Now, more than willing. You got a new children's book you want me to read? Feel free, Jackie@JackieCation.com. Send it to me. Mm-hmm. Anyway, but the dog books were written by a guy named Jim Kjelgaard, and there was one about a show setter, like a dog show dog, and it was an Irish setter. And it was named Big Red. And then Big Red sired a dog that was a rebel. And that dog was Outlaw Red. And Outlaw Red ran away. And Outlaw Red runs into the woods and in Tennessee or Kentucky or whatever. And then comes back and springs free a girl dog so that they, you know, he wouldn't want to be alone. And so they go off into the woods. And I forget what she, but she actually remembered this, Kristen McGuire. She remembered all these things about Outlaw Red and about the injury. Oh, I know. There was a line in the Jim Kjelgaard book about how they were going to get rid of Outlaw Red because, the boy already owned two dogs and there wasn't enough love in his heart to have three dogs.
I know it.
It seemed a little dark. I was like, they're dogs.
A little insulting to the kid.
Yeah. I think
they can't love three dogs. That's a small heart.
Not to have a third.
Right. Yeah. Two pets per person is the rule in Los Angeles. You can only have two cats. You can only have two dogs.
That's your rule.
That is not my rule. That's a city rule. City ordinance.
What?
In Los Angeles. Yeah. You can only have two pets. Yeah. Hence the television program.
Hence
Animal.
All the stray cats.
Animal hoarders. Yeah. Oh, and crazy cat lady who lives right by us who has stray cats, in quotes, which is why she gets to have 11 cats or whatever. Yeah, and feed them all. They never come inside. They're not hers. And yet, they're hers. She feeds them. They're her cat. She named them. Anyway.
Well, does that also mean that the possums and the raccoons who also eat the food are her cat or her? Are her pets?
I saw some sort of rodent the other day. It was a waddle waddle.
What possum?
Is that does a possum waddle with a pointy tail?
Yep.
Yeah, that's an ugly animal.
A little scary.
Yeah.
Yeah, they look like skull faces.
No, I've only seen the butt, and I'm okay with that. Them coming at me with their skull faces would be less. Where's that 20-minute game? Me and my pet possum. The doll could be played by a possum. What are the other cards?
Oh,
yeah. Are they more the same or?
As sort of so I've got two copies of Doll here.
Sure.
As half a joke, half a design exercise, you know, every role playing game needs an expansion. Doll is
a postcard sized card.
Yes. And so this is Advanced Doll, which is.
Advanced Doll. It's another postcard.
Yes.
Fantastic. Longer sections.
Longer Sessions.
Reverse doll.
The child must help the doll understand the world. Oh.
See, I would want to play that, where the child helps the doll.
Multiple children, multiple dolls, so multiplayer.
Multiple children.
And actually, you know, I take it back. Advanced Doll is two, and it seems like I only brought one. So that you only have half the expansion. But the whole point of it is you can just pick one of these paragraphs and say, all right, I've played Doll enough. Now I want to play Reverse Doll.
Right.
That's great.
That is great. Good. Nice work. Well, thank you. That is, so do you have a day job?
Oh, yeah.
I'm so sorry. I want you to not have a day job, but it seems to be the obvious thing with...
Yes.
Because you're an indie game designer.
Indeed.
Yeah.
I know maybe two game designers who do not have day jobs. I work at an accounting office, and I'm slowly working on maybe going back to get my PhD someday. But
oh,
for
fun.
Now,
yeah, you work in an accounting office and you make games. So, and you have children.
Did I read also that you're a minister?
Indeed, yes. That is another job that I have that does not pay all the bills.
I was going to say that can't pay more than $100 a week. And then you got the podcast.
Yes.
Which is another non-paying. You've really got a good fiscal plan going here.
My wife.
Okay. Well, no,
it's a good collection. You've got a good collection of.
Yeah, it's fun. And
of things that will almost pay you.
Yes. And if any one of those things decides to start making more money.
Right.
Then, you know, accounting will never go anywhere. But.
Right. And accounting, it's definitely one of those things that will always be there. So that's...
Would a PhD be in theology?
It probably would be something more game or story related. It's
like fiction writing or?
No, there are game design programs.
Yes.
Especially in Europe. And a few of them are computer game related.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
And those are the ones that I'm interested in. But there's also...
Are they in Germany where all great board games...
Actually, in Denmark is a good one.
Right, and the Scandinavian... if you'll talk to Aaron Vanek, friend of the show, he will tell you all about the Scandinavian LARP community, which is super academic.
Because there are more socialist countries, you can have a government-sponsored club about anything.
Okay.
Which has been going on long enough that the LARP clubs are actually fairly well put together organizations, and they have conventions there just for... Not just for games, not just for LARPs, but you know this one's about this very specific kind of.
This is historical fiction LARP. Yeah. This is science fiction LARP.
Nordic LARPs.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, weird.
All that to say that it's popular enough there to support some PhD programs, but there, the sort of game studies academic world is maybe 10 years old. So I'm still figuring out if I pursue that. Where is there going to be a full-time job on the other end? Because I don't want to live in Denmark forever.
Right,
right,
right. Though I hear that they live forever because they have a really good social net.
But it does get a little chilly.
It is chilly. But and where are we now? Dallas. Okay.
Well, I'm a Minnesota boy.
Oh, are you from Minnesota? Where are you from in Minnesota?
Rochester is where I lived a long time.
Ah, Rochester.
A southern Minnesota boy. Everybody else can call me
the balmy warmer.
Yes, that's where the Mayo Clinic is. It's I've had one show there one time, did so poorly, got one laugh when I said, "How many people in the audience are just here killing time waiting for a loved one to die?" And that's the only laugh I got. Because the entire audience thought it was the most hilarious thing I had ever seen. Because I had been eating it for about 25 minutes. And they were like, "Oh, this is not good. Please say something at least shocking." And so I did. And our lives were made better because of it. And then I never returned to Rochester, Minnesota to do stand-up comedy. Although I understand there is a comedy club there now.
I've been to Dallas long enough that I couldn't tell you for sure.
Sure.
So you don't have to do comedy in the waiting room at the Mayo Clinic.
No, I no longer have to. I was not. It was a dive bar. It was a dive bar, and there was, you know, it's never good when the waitress has a bloody nose. Oh. Yeah. I did not mean that to get that reaction from you. You guys are correct because you're human. I am clearly some sort of cybernetic being that I'm like,
people get bloody noses for a variety of reasons.
Right. I don't know if she had been punched in the face.
Somebody just punched her in the face.
Or meth, I guess, is one of those two things, some sort of drug.
Far north. I shouldn't know this.
But oh.
As a Midwestern, I think that might be too far north for a lot of meth.
Oh, no, there's meth everywhere now. Oh, yeah, if you... ladies, Rangers of the Dork Forest, if you're looking for meth, I recommend...
Anywhere that people have allergies.
You find... Why?
The Sudafed.
Oh, okay. Oh, right. It's a Sudafed joke. I was like, no, I missed it.
When I lived in Iowa, which I also did for a long time...
Yep.
There was a lot of meth production, kind of shady parts of that, because I guess one of the main components is related to, it's something that farmers would legitimately have.
Okay.
So
they could, yeah.
Hey, well, we have a lot of this, you might as well.
Yeah. If you want to find where meth is happening, find the railroad and then just follow it to sort of near the outskirts of town. You will, in the Dakotas, you'll find a couple of Native Americans doing Lysol. And then right near there, you'll find some sort of meth lab. It's very sad. It's one of the saddest. In other words, please. Okay, yeah, talk about games.
The meth game is coming out again.
Right, what's the meth game?
Something Breaking Bad.
Yeah, a Breaking Bad game would be pretty fascinating, but I don't think it would be about
like the making of meth.
Meth making. It would be about the sort of bigger world.
Yeah. Oh, where
there are bad guys and conflict.
Okay, so it could just be a like a mob kind of game, yeah. Or a mafia kind of game or something. Okay,
and then the bromance between.
Oh, between Walt and the kid?
And the kid.
All right. That was so not a bromance. There was just like heads a button. And then eventually, was it a bromance? Yeah. All right, defined
that's
as.
That's how romances start, you know.
That's how it is?
Yeah.
On page 47, they kiss.
Kiss, kiss, kiss.
On page 127, they decide they like each other.
Ah. And then, I think... Have you read Harlequin Romances? I think that's the formula.
There is
definitely a formula. It's okay. So we're near an hour, but do you want to get into something?
No, I was just going to ask about you talked about maybe going back and getting a PhD. Do you have a master's now?
Yes, theology.
In theology. Okay.
Oh, cool. Where'd you get that?
Dallas Theological Seminary.
Catchy, catchy. All right. Nice work. Where'd you get your undergrad?
University of Iowa.
Okay, nice. Quad Cities?
No, Iowa City.
Iowa City, there we go. My knowledge of Iowa is scattered.
You're only about an hour off.
Right, well, it's... yeah. It's fine.
All right. I can't judge. I have absolutely no knowledge of Iowa.
You do not. You were raised in Central California,
right.
So...
Well, all of my Northern... California knowledge is podcast-based, so...
Oh, really? Is it because you listen to podcasts and so you know where the Los Angeles-based podcasts are? Are there San Francisco-based podcasts?
Oh, my gosh,
well,
yes.
That you listen to.
Jordan Jesse Go is virtually a San Francisco-based podcast because Jesse Thorne mentions being from San Francisco.
Every episode? Fair enough. And yet he lives in Eagle Rock or Silver Lake or some damn thing. And... well, that's interesting because I'm sure that there's a large wherever there are comics, there's definitely podcasts, and then everybody else gets to do them as well.
Do you listen to some other game podcasts?
I do. I actually listen to more comedy podcasts now, but there are as many game podcasts as.
What are some good ones?
If you go to RPGpodcasts.com, you can find a bunch.
Wow.
SpookyOuthouse.com.
There's a website for everything, it turns out.
It turns out.
There's a big list. I'm trying not to mention the ones that are no longer there because they, you know, stopped recording.
Oh, right.
The Jankcast out of Chicago is pretty good.
Okay.
I feel like I'm throwing a bunch of people under the bus because they don't come to mind immediately.
Oh, fair enough.
But if you go to those two those websites, there's a big list, and a lot of them are just a
oh, cool. Yeah, it's, you know, the All Things Comedy is the podcast network that I'm in. And It's almost entirely stand-up comics, and but it's all different kinds of podcasting. Like the Crab Feast is all storytelling, and then I mean it can be
Crab Feast.
It's a crab feast where they have a feast, and then you tell stories to each other. That's the theory.
You get to listen to them eat crab.
Blessedly, there's no eating. There's no eating happening. Doug Benson has an eating podcast, but I don't know if there's a lot of nom, 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 and then talk, talk, talk.
There was for a while, but they've done better.
Oh, if they figured out how to not eat into the mic as much.
All podcasts learn that.
That is a – right. I had one episode with Matt Knutson where I ate an entire shrimp ring. Me, him, and dang it, I'm spacing the third comic. But Matt Knutson brought like a giant shrimp ring. And how can you not eat a shrimp ring that's in front of you?
You got to eat it while it's fresh.
And we could have stuck it in the fridge.
Let me ask you another question, another gaming question. What are you excited about playing that you haven't yet played? Board game or
I want to
role playing game or
I want to
video game
play lots of games because my kids are 5 years old and can play with themselves. I want to play more American freeform games, which are just that's a broad category for things that are a little bit like LARP and a little bit like tabletop. Mm-hmm. There's one that's coming out called Night Witches by Jason Morningstar. He's come up with several. But Fiasco is one of his first that I'm aware of. It's basically if a Coen Brothers movie were a game.
Oh, cool.
And halfway through, you roll some dice to see what terrible thing has gone wrong.
So the first half of the game, you build essentially your world, and then there's a certain point where you roll dice and go, oh, well, that fell apart.
So the last time I played that one, I was a gay kick designer who... Two-thirds of the way through the game, my bakery exploded and I died.
Aww.
Which is okay because I was sleeping with the groom and I would have ruined the wedding if I had lived.
Exactly, and now they could marry and be happily ever after.
Unresolved. He's got another game called Night Witches, which is a game that's about a historical group of people who are these Russian lady pilots in World War II who would fly into German-occupied territory, turn off their engines, and then just coast for miles and miles, and then drop bombs. So they were stealth planes because they would turn their planes off.
So they were basically just gliding in? Is this a real thing?
Yes.
Based on a real...
Awesome.
Only the Russians.
Yes.
Good job, Russians, on how brave you are, but how stupid are you? Because that's crazy talk.
Well, what's awesome about this is it just shows you can make games about anything.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's true. All right, let's recap some websites. And we have at Josh T. Jordan for Twitter, and for Heroin and all of your games, what's a good site?
You can. I could give you my blog, but I will tell you instead where to buy them, which is indiepressrevolution.com.
Okay.
Or if you just want the digital download, you can go to drivethrurpg.com.
Okay. And I'll link those too.
And my little company is called Ginger Goat. So you can either search for the title Heroin or you can search for Ginger Goat and you'll be able to find anything.
Ginger Goat, like a red haired goat?
Yes.
Okay, cool.
Or a guy who has red hair only on his goatee.
Oh, fair enough. Ginger goat. Yes. All right. Wait a minute. I'm looking at your goatee. Okay, so, and how about you, Andy Ashcraft? Where can people see your games?
My game, you'll be able to see it at, you'll be able to see Brutiki at the first Exposure Playtest Hall at Gen Con.
Right. And if people.
I don't know the times yet.
Okay, but if you go to Giants Dance Games...
GiantsDanceGames.com is where you'll see my resume and...
and other games you've made.
A few other things.
But, and there are piranhas there, too, if you want to play.
Piranhas there, but...
But that's fine.
It's a print-and-play little fast game that came out of a game design workshop.
All right, so Giants is plural. Games is plural. Right. Dance is singular.
Yes.
Giants Dance really. Games. But really, come to Gen Con and play Brutiki.
Play Brutiki. Come to Gen Con, play whatever game Josh is going to run and pitch there.
Indeed, yeah. If you go to Games on Demand, I will be volunteering there. That is a place where you can go, show up, no preparation needed, and they'll give you some kind of weird fun game.
Awesome.
Cool. All right. Hey, this has been great. I've learned a great deal about game design, and I've learned the dolls continue to creep everyone out. So thanks for listening, Rangers. Take care out there. Bye. Thanks for listening.
My hat, my hat, my hat. They're dancing around my hat. My hat, my hat, my hat. Well, what do you think of that? If it looks like a Mexican hat dance and it sounds like a Mexican hat dance, it's most likely a Mexican hat dance. So take off your hat and let's dance.
Yay! Oh my God. Thank you. Why don't we just call that as the end of the show?